Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is the Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. It's wonderful to be here. We have a very large audience today. I'm happy all of you are with us. We appreciate you being here. Richard and I sometimes do pre-records, and we have no audience, and it's very, very different. So thank you for being here. Richard.
I'm with you. I really do like a live audience. I know a number of people who prefer pre-records, but I just like the live. It's more exciting, especially when things don't work.
Yes, like our microphones this morning. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, I was talking into nothing. You know, it's like hello. It gets the adrenaline going right out of the gate, which is great.
Yeah. We have a wonderful guest that's going to share information today about health and wellness. And we've had a lot of guests like that, from Gwen Olson, the fed-up pharmaceutical rep, to the naturopath Stephen Hewer, who informs us about vitamins. Each of them were attempting to warn us about self-health and self-responsibility. So we have another guest from a different angle today. She is a trained physician. She has her own radio show. She's a whistleblower, and she's going to share the bottom line of how doctors are being forced by standards of care, rules, and regulations to put your life in jeopardy. So we'll be with her in a few moments. Excuse me. But, Richard, do you have any announcements this morning?
I don't have anything to rant about, although I could at the drop of a hat. I am happy to say, at least from the California perspective, that we have had some rain. But just for a perspective, we have had in California since October an inch and a half of rain. So for those that are, you know, listening to me grouse about drought, we're not kidding. We're very droughty, even though it has begun to rain a little. But it's only an inch and a half. It's not a lot.
Well, we see people up at every week, so that's great.
Yep.
We should let people know that we are simultaneously broadcasting. I forgot this part that we're supposed to do every time. And that we are being broadcast on Blog Talk Radio over there with Richard, and the name of the show is Sound Health Options. How do they get there, Richard?
The easiest way for people to get to either Sherry's feed, which is a WebEx video feed, or to get to Blog Talk Radio is to go to Sound Health Options, then click on the radio tab, and then today click on the Blog Talk Radio tab, and there's a link down there that'll take you either to the WebEx meeting where you can see what Sherry's showing us and join that chat, and or you can also dial in to the Blog Talk Radio show at 347-850-1407, or there's also a link there to click and join the chat over at Blog Talk Radio.
And we love people chatting and sending us letters and ideas for shows, so we would expect that you'll have some questions for our guests, and that's great, although we have a bunch. We're being sponsored today by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health. We're a registered 501c3 nonprofit, the largest research center in Ohio. We think nobody's countermanded what we say there. And we are being sponsored specifically by our radiation software because I have an announcement about radiation that's coming up. So that software is at soundhealthoptions.com under downloads, and it's free. There are also some charts there that you can use. And, Richard, when Fukushima first happened, you helped us create this software. So can you tell people in a few seconds, minutes, about your experience with it?
Yes. When Fukushima first happened and Sherry quickly put out software to test your vocal print to see if there was radiation in your vocal print, I was in the very early stages and was taking daily vocal prints and sending them to Sherry, and she was running them through the software to see the results, and then I got the software, and this was before I had a tone box. So what I would do is Sherry had this amazingly great chart showing me that if something showed up in my vocal print, that I could also use a supplement of some kind, typically to, let's say I had too much cobalt, and it might be counteractive to B12. I'm making this part up, but in terms of that, I then would take extra doses of B12, or if there was something else that was showing that I could counterbalance it with vitamin D, I would do that. And we took many tests. I don't know, I probably every day for a month or more, I tested, and I found I had very good results. I didn't have any, because I live on the Pacific North, in the Pacific Northwest, sort of Northern California, coastal side, about 20 minutes from the coast. And there were just regular readouts of high levels in my vocal print. And it was just, once you get into the habit of doing it, it's really easy to take a vocal print, run it through the software, it gives you the information, and then you can take action based on that software, which is amazing. And fits right in with our guest of being, you know, self-empowered and having choice.
And the price is right.
The price is right. What is the price today?
$0.00.
Yeah,
and
it's amazing.
We've got a lot of information back from people, and this is one of the reasons we're providing it today, about how the doses are going up again and that Fukushima is continuing to cause problems. What people are seeing now is from Dr. Apsley, John Apsley, who's a specialist in medicine and radioactive antidotes. And you can see how this map he's showing where it's going to and from. It seems to be hitting the west coast of the United States and the upper east coast, which people don't understand, up near Massachusetts and so forth. So there's a lot of articles out there. I will put the one that we're showing in the chat for people. And you'll be putting that over in your blog talk chat too, won't you, Richard?
Yes, I will.
Okay, another real quick announcement. You know, I would bet that no rain is really problematic for all of this radiation. Or is it the other way around? The radiation won't get in the water table because there isn't any. We should ask our guest if she knows anything about that. The other one here is about new study links multiple infant vaccines to increase death rate. So we'd like to ask our guest about that also. How vaccines, are they a lethal dose of medicine? That's all of my announcements. Richard, do you have any more?
I don't think so. I have a kind of a long lead-in to greeting Dr. Daniels, but I can't help it. You'll
okay.
See why. She has an amazing story. Dr. Jennifer Daniels attended Harvard Radcliffe College. She was distinguished as a National Merit Achievement Scholar and a Radcliffe National Scholar. After majoring in biology, she received her BA degree with honors. Dr. Daniels entered the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine and at the same time completed her studies at the Wharton School. She received her medical degree, MD, and her MBA concurrently at the end of 4 years. While in school, she was concerned with patients were not improving with the therapies she was being taught. She was told that the patients were poor and due to financial and educational limitations were often not able to comply with therapy. Also, present methods were not perfect. Half of everything being taught was not beneficial. The medical school staff did not know which half, and ongoing research would sort it out.
Really?
While practicing medicine, Dr. Daniels noticed that despite compliance on the part of patients, the patients seemed to worsen under the care she had been trained to provide. She decided to give patients a choice between the standard of care, doing nothing, and natural therapies. diet, lifestyle, supplements, cleansing, herbs, etc. Dr. Daniels found that the death rate in her medical practice went from 4 a year to zero. She also found that there were no more after-hour emergencies. This did not go unnoticed. Dr. Daniels did not know that the hospital was tracking which doctors were admitting patients, how many patients were being admitted, and how many of each test the doctors were ordering. One day, she received a call from a concerned hospital representative. The person wanted to know where Dr. Daniels was sending her patients for hospitalization and where she was ordering her outpatient tests. She truthfully answered that she was only using their hospital. The representative said, "Oh." And on that cliffhanger, I'd like to welcome Dr. Daniels and have you tell us the rest of that story. Good morning.
Well, I can barely be here on the show. Okay, let me give
now
you a little more volume. How's that?
No, you're good.
Okay.
You're good now. Thank you.
All right, we'll leave it at that. I really am thrilled to be on the show because I think that both of you really put a lot of thought into this topic because it's not one where the first answer is really makes sense, actually. What happened when I received that call is this was just my absolute favorite hospital. I had trained there. They were very nice to me. I really liked the staff. The administration was so helpful to me in opening my office. And so when I got a call from the assistant to the chief administrator, I was just so happy to talk to her. And I just thought that we were going to have this great conversation and I was going to tell her how happy I was with my practice and what a great hospital they had. And instead, she asked me this question, and so I give her what I think is a positive answer. "Oh, my God, no, I would never be disloyal to your hospital. Of course I'm sending all of my patients to your hospital." And what she'd really asked me, the rest of her question was, "What can they do to help me send more of my patients to their hospital?" In other words, I was offered a bribe. And so, again, being totally oblivious to this, I said, you know, basically, "Oh, you don't have to bribe me. I think you guys are just really awesome, and I would send all my patients there." And I do. And she just said, "Oh," and hung up the phone. I was like, "Oh, what happened there?" And so what she realized was I must not be practicing the standard of care because, one, I was still in business, and two, I wasn't hospitalizing patients for ordering deadly, invasive, often, you know, radioactive and damaging tests. So if you're a doctor and you're not following the standard of care, everybody knows immediately because you're just not generating the revenue you ought to be generating. The doctor's take, if you want to call it that, so his gross revenue in his medical practice is only 20% of the healthcare dollar. The other 80% happens as a result of what he orders. So if the doctor, let's say his revenue in 1 month is $10,000, then somebody else that month got $50,000, or I'm sorry, $40,000. And if they don't get their $40,000, they know because it's a fair chunk of change. So that is the truth about the doctor. So they only give the doctor this 20% to keep him generating the other 80%. And so when the doctor doesn't generate the other 80%, the hospital knows because their beds are going empty. The insurance company knows because people are dropping their insurance and paying the doctor directly in cash. The drug companies know because the prescriptions aren't being written and they track that. And so I got negative feedback, I mean, serious pressure from each of these interest groups.
Wow. Now, I have to pause here. There are so many questions, but I have to pause because in your book, you talk about the term standard of care. Would you define standard of care for us?
The standard of care is the generally recognized behavior test the doctor is supposed to order, drugs he's supposed to prescribe in response to patient complaints. And in response to, say, patient complaint A, the doctor is supposed to order tests B, C, and D. And if any abnormalities are found, and they will be found, because of the false positive rate, then he's supposed to order a whole other tier of tests and so on. And then he's supposed to prescribe drug A or B. Sometimes he has a choice. But when he prescribes either of those drugs, they will have side effects. They've even done a study. At least 25% of people get harmed by side effects, and 75% experience side effects. So of these, let's say 25% who get harmed by side effects, he's then supposed to prescribe a whole another second tier of drugs to address those side effects. And on it goes. And so you can see with this, so the standard of care then tells the doctor what he should do. And this is why when you go from one doctor to the next doctor, you get a second opinion, a lot of times it's not very much different. It's more like an echo, because all of the doctors are sticking to the same standard of care. And this standard of care is what the doctor is judged by in the event of a malpractice suit. The first question is, did the doctor stick to the standard of care? And if he did, boom, no case, no compensation.
We have a question from our audience in this same line. Do doctors get a kickback from vaccinations?
No, unfortunately not. They do not get a kickback from vaccinations. I mean, it would depend on what you call a kickback. If you're calling a kickback increased money, no, they don't. Doctors might get a certificate recognizing them for having a high vaccination rate. Doctors might be told that their hospital or their clinic is attempting to achieve certification, and if they achieve a certain vaccination rate, then that certification will be achieved by the clinic. So a doctor's reward for vaccines is more like you give a kid an Eagle Scout badge for a certain level of achievement. But actually getting a dollar profit, no.
With all of this controversy about vaccines, how are they convincing doctors that this is okay?
Again, the feedback that doctors get, the reward they get is that they get to keep their license. The reward that they get is they get to keep their job. And in my medical practice, the government actually came to my office and asked me to show all of my charts so they could determine my vaccination rate. That's some pretty heavy pressure. Yeah, very heavy pressure. Well, who knows what they're allowed to do? People will do what you let them. And so I told them, oh, no, thank you. I won't be doing that. You know, I'm just a one-doctor office. I only have one employee. We don't have the staff to cooperate with your request. And so that they went away for like 6 months. And they came back and said, well, you know, Dr. Daniels, you're in a poor, economically challenged neighborhood, and we just want to check the standard of level of health care populations receiving, and reviewing your charts we think would help us just get another data point. And we'll provide all the staff to go through all your charts. And I said, you know what, I'm sorry, we just can't cooperate with that. And then they came back again, I think 6 months later, with another request. I said, well, you know, giving vaccines, and this is the truth, is a financial hardship for me as a physician because, one, they cost a lot of money. Your doctor has to actually pay between $10 and $50 per dose of vaccines that he gives. Then he has to pay for the needle. Then he has to pay for the staff. Then he has to record it in his physical record and keep that physical record for at least 20 years and reproduce and distribute it without charge. So when a doctor, and then there's the office visit, of course. So the real cost for a doctor giving one vaccine is very close to like $100. And the doctor's compensation isn't anywhere near that amount of money. But doctors have been so brainwashed in the benefit of vaccines and their duty to serve and help that many of them say, well, I'm just going to make this sacrifice and I'll just lose money on vaccines. It's almost impossible to make money vaccinating a kid. So what I figured out in my practice, having an MBA, I crunched the numbers. I said, whoa, it's the end of this. And so I stopped giving vaccines because people would make appointments the week before school started to get their kids all vaccinated up. And then after I shot $100 worth of stuff into this kid's arm, or $200 worth, the parents would check out and not pay. It was so bad, I closed my office for that week every year. I just closed my office. And so they'd have to go find some other doctor to take advantage of. Then what I did was I took all the vaccines out of my refrigerator and sent them back to the company for a refund because it was just such an incredible money loser. And so I told my patients who wanted vaccines that they could go to the local public health clinic and get them for free. I didn't care how rich or how poor the parents were. That's where they could go get their vaccine. But again, most doctors, you know, cost analysis was not their strong suit, and so they could not see where they were losing all this money on vaccines.
So besides the money, is there really any benefit in vaccines?
To who?
To the children getting them and causing all these problems that you...
There is no benefit to the child to get vaccines. That's established, that there is no benefit to the child to get the vaccines. That's pretty clear. And what makes that clear is that the frequency of disease and death does not decline in a vaccinated population. In my own observation, having a practice of 5,000 people, I saw that my vaccinated children in my medical practice were tremendously sicker than the unvaccinated. So an unvaccinated child in my medical practice, from birth to age 18, only thing I would see him for would be a laceration, a broken bone, or a school physical. That's all the visits. But you give me a vaccinated kid in my medical practice, oh, my God, ear infections, bronchitis, asthma, pneumonia, I mean, incredible stuff, a dermatitis, eczema. I mean, the list is incredible. But the unvaccinated kids, the only reason for them to show up was they cut themselves with a knife, maybe they were chopping onions or something, or they had a government mandated, you need this physical to go to camp, or you need this physical to enter some kind of program or activity they wanted to do. There would be no pediatrics. There would be no pediatric practice at all if the kids were not vaccinated, because all these routine pediatric illnesses just wouldn't happen.
I want to jump slightly. This is part of the foundation. Would you tell us about the term, I can't remember if I read it somewhere, and I think I read it in your book. I've read so much about you. The term LD50, what that's in reference to, because the title of your book means more than I think people think. So talk to us about LD50, would you please?
LD50, L stands for lethal, D stands for dose, and 50 stands for 50%. So this is the dose at which this drug will kill 50% of those who receive it.
Wow.
LD50. Is that okay? That seems ridiculous.
Well, again, you take a sleep-deprived population of medical students, you know, you get no sleep, you're up, you know, at least 90 hours a day paying attention, so to speak, and you tell them, we have a definition of deadly. Our definition of deadly is a dose that kills 50% of those who take it. And when it's presented in that light, you say, well, of course that's deadly. And it's presented in that, that's exactly the words that are used. In medicine, we need a dose, a definition for deadly. And deadly is a dose at which 50% who take the drug die. Of course, stupid me raised my hand. I said, well, what about LD0? Dr. Daniels, oh, they didn't call me doctor then. Jennifer, there is no such dose. Well, you can imagine, I was crushed. I heard that. Whoa. You mean I'm prescribing stuff that's deadly even at the prescribed dose? And so then it says, well, you know, at the prescribed dose, if you stick to the, you know, parameters and you know how to prescribe it, then it won't be LD50, of course, because the dose of therapy is less than LD50. But anything less than LD50 is not considered lethal. So to be considered lethal, something has to kill 50% or more of those who take it.
Wow.
And then as medical school progressed, this was not repeated again and again and again. LD50 was dropped, and this place was called the lethal dose. And so what we were told was, oh, well, this dose of that drug is not lethal. Well, not lethal means it's less than LD50. So maybe only 10% of people who take it die, or 1% of people who take it die. Now, as a person consuming drugs, wouldn't you like to know that this drug has killed and does kill people? But again, the doctor's so programmed and desensitized that if it's not LD50, oh, that's not a deadly dose.
Is this why you are no longer in the medical field? That this just is too much to bear?
No. I didn't have the sense to leave. They had to kick me out. What I did was once I gave people a choice and the death rate went to zero, I was pretty happy. I said, okay, fine. I've done my part. I'm making sure I'm not killing anyone. I'm offering people choices that I know from my experience will help them, and people are getting better. So that's what I thought. I thought that, hey, that's, you know, it's good for me. It's good for my patients. They're getting better. They're happy. I'm happy. But there's this economic fallout, which is the hospital was not getting any business. The scripts weren't being written. I got a threatening, menacing visit from a drug rep. My patients were dropping their health insurance. I got a menacing phone call from an insurance agent and vice president of a local HMO that they could not sell policies because of me. And so it was just kind of closing in, you know, just getting tighter and tighter and tighter, this negative feedback. And I realized that, people were noticing, not people so much, institutions, corporations. And so it was a very uneasy feeling. So here I was dancing on the head of a pin, so to speak, or a tight wire, and I become aware of this, what was presented to the public as a $30 million bond issue. And, of course, it was a bond issue to supposedly renovate school in my neighborhood of Syracuse. So, of course, all taxpayers would have to pay for it. But I calculated the impact on my little neighborhood, or just every Syracuse citizen, is that their taxes would have to be raised about $150 a year to pay for this thing. Well, the problem was I had a cash practice in a pretty poor neighborhood. So you take away $150 a year, what are they going to cut back on? Well, me. So I said, well, we can't do this. And then I looked deeper into it to find that it wasn't really a bond issue. That was just a cover story. It was really a $30 million no collateral signature loan to private citizens who had bribed the governor. I didn't realize they'd bribed the governor. Found that out too late. But I found that out, and I basically contacted the bank and told them that there was a bank robbery in progress for $30 million, and I just thought they should know. And that if they made the loan, they would never, ever get repaid. And if they tried to collect, they would have to institute draconian measures that would make their third world activities appear genteel. And, of course, I signed it, your most humble and faithful servant, Dr. Jennifer Daniel. And then I attached to it over 300 letters from private citizens that said, we do not want our government to take out this loan, but if they take it out, we do not want them to pay it back. And so the bankers had this packet delivered to them. And when they got this packet, oh, my gosh, you could hear the fireworks all the way in Syracuse because the bank was in it was the Hong Kong Bank, New York City branch. And so What they did was they never wrote me back. They contacted the mayor's office and the school board and the common council and said, we are coming to Syracuse. This is the date of our arrival. Put all other matters aside. And by golly, the government did. I mean, it stopped for a full day while the bankers came in and interrogated everybody. And they asked each body, do you guarantee this loan with the tax receipts of Syracuse, New York, or whatever tax receipts you have access to? And everybody said, well, not I. I'm like a Chicken Little, you know. Everyone said no. And so the bankers got in the plane and flew out of town. And then government resumed. You can almost like you could feel it. And so 3 days later, this article appears in the paper. Bankers have come. They've questioned. But they need certain information. And the newspaper outlined A, B, C, D. I looked at it and I said, I'm the only one that's got that information, but I'm busy practicing medicine. So I didn't write them. And I didn't even read the paper, really. Someone brought it to me. Dr. Daniels, look at this. I looked at it and I said, that's interesting. And so I was busy and I didn't answer. And then 3 days later, another article said, bankers are still waiting for this information. And I said, I better write that letter. So I wrote the letter, sent it off. And 3 days later in the paper, it said, bankers have received the information they need, and they are deliberating. I said, I guess they got the mail. And they decide not to make the loan. Oh, my gosh. Everything just, like this big firestorm. Because $30 million is a lot of money. And so there were people who were waiting to get their hands on this money, and they had taken out loans to bribe the governor. One person had demolished the inside of their building and gutted this private building the money is going to be used for. And so all of these people experienced financial hardship, we'll call it ruin. And so they started suing the intermediary that they used to bribe the governor, and things got pretty nasty in the paper. Of course, my name was never mentioned. And the governor called the licensing board and said, this doctor does not need a license. So rather than pay back the bribe money, which is like, who would do that? The governor had to show that he could be bribed. He could not let this go unpunished or unanswered. And so the licensing board launched into action, and they took my license over a case of a young person who came to my office with blood sugar of 475, and I reduced it to 136 in 1 week without medication. And that was characterized as a pattern of inappropriate practice of medicine.
Why? You normalized it. That isn't even logical. I guess that means they can just get
it.
It
is. It's very logical. Extremely logical. And I think people need to take this as an example. This is the proper functioning of the medical industrial complex and the proper functioning of the licensing board. The only reason to have a licensing board is for the government to have political power over doctors and to be able to take anyone's license if they do anything the government is not pleased with. That's number one. Number two, I might have lowered this person's blood sugar from 475 to 136 in 1 week without medication or side effects, but I did not follow the standard of care. That was not the standard of care. The standard of care, if someone comes to your office with a blood sugar like that, is to immediately hospitalize them. There's ka-ching, at least $10,000 to $50,000 for the hospital, to start him on drugs for life and have him test his blood sugar 4 times a day, ka-ching, $10,000 a year for the drug company. And so these things did not happen. No hospital got paid. No drugs were issued. He certainly wasn't told to test his blood sugar 4 times a day. It wasn't necessary.
Are you allowed to tell us how you did that?
Sure.
A lot of people
It's not proprietary information. I didn't use any drugs for it. I mean, no patented materials at all were used. I put him on an organic, unprocessed vegan diet, all you can eat. That's what I did. And he was pretty young, so I told him to, you know, if he wanted to walk around the block, ride his bicycle, whatever, he could do that. So, you know, being a young person, he's only like 19, I'm not going to tell him to sit around and do nothing. So I said, you know, do what you want to do. And this is what you do. And, oh, he had to drink a lot of water. And that's it. It just, his blood sugar, you know, went down to essentially normal.
Well, and you have this really wonderful chapter in your book titled No Cure is Allowed. And it wasn't until I looked at this that I hadn't consciously thought about the fact that doctors treat. They are not allowed, what you're saying here in this chapter is they're not really not allowed to use or, you know, you're not curing anything as a doctor. That's not your intention.
No, we're not allowed to. Right.
You're
not allowed to
cure anything. You're only allowed to treat. And is that
partially
because of liability, or is that partially because it's more like what you're talking about, where the idea of what that boy should have done is be in the hospital and been on drugs and been all that. Is that part of the agenda, do you think? Or is it just languaging for liability?
It has nothing to do with liability. It has everything to do with the fact that the drugs don't work, and the people training us know they don't work. But we naive students entering medical school presumed, I mean, that's why we entered medical school. We thought the stuff really worked. We were true believers. We wanted that knowledge. It was going to be effective. And the people training us knew the drugs did not work. And so they used the word treat. But we, as self-hypnotizing doctors in training who wanted to believe, we didn't say, whoa, stop everything. What do you mean we're not curing anything? That's what I'm here. I'm here for the cures. Because by the time you get to the point where you're in medical school, you are so encumbered with debt from undergraduate that pretty close to top on your mind is being able to pay off that debt. And so the idea of dropping out of medical school with a little word like treat instead of cure, you know, it's pretty drastic. Well, maybe we can work this out. Okay, we're going to treat. Well, find the treatment is, you know, researched by scientists and approved by organizations. And it's a standard that's understood and the government stands behind it. Well, it must be okay.
Are there some medications that are okay, or are they all bad?
When you say all bad, I'm not really sure what you mean, but it's been my observation that pretty much every medication has a superior natural alternative to it.
Okay, one of the questions being asked by the audience is, what would she do about Candida? are you really allowed?
I have you drink any kind, of course. You go to my website, vitalitycapsules.com/Candida, and you'll get a free report on how to treat and cure Candida. And so I was the first one to launch this. I launched this 2010 on the internet, and it was a blockbuster hit. It went viral. No one had ever heard of using turpentine to cure anything, let alone drinking it, for Christ's sake. And so this really opened up a whole new vista of healing. And now you have healers all over the internet promoting turpentine.
Well, and I think that one of the interesting things to me about the Vitality Capsules, if you'll scroll down that page, Sherry, is that I have a degree as a master herbalist, and I had an herb store in a national mail order catalog in the 80s. That's how old I am. And what I think is so interesting is that you're talking about, you know, this is an herbal formulation. This is a great spin on a classic herbal formulation. And so many of the herbs originally back in the 80s, we used to talk about the fact, and this was true then, I'm not sure what the stats are now, they're probably still true but just spun out further, is that 75% of the pharmaceuticals in the book, in the Pharmacopoeia, which was the reference book when pharmacists actually did compounding of their own, were originally derived from herbs. So I think it's so cool that you've gone back to using, you know, you've gone back to the future. I really feel like we need a sound effect of you're using herbs. You're giving people herbs as whole foods that in turn make them healthier. Oh, my God. It's a shocking idea. And it's so far away from the idea of traditional Western medicine of, like, you're actually wanting your patients to be, can they even use the word healthy in Western medicine? Is that allowed to use the word healthy?
No, we don't use the word healthy. The word we use is walkie-talkie. Walkie-talkie. So if we could turn a person into a walkie-talkie, that's a success. And so I was in medical school, I said, what's a walkie-talkie? That's a person that can walk and talk and do nothing else. Imagine if you could walk, you could talk, and you could do nothing else. That's the full extent of your talents and skills. That is a success.
I'm speechless, as we know it doesn't happen. It's just amazing that that's actually a phrase that would be like used in rooms.
It's a phrase
rooms.
In medical school. It's
wow.
A phrase in medical school because I was so concerned. I was, hey, this person walked into the hospital. They're doing fine. Now they're in this bed. They're darn near comatose. You know, we're doing all these tests. We're getting all these drugs. They're getting worse and worse and worse. And the senior doctor comes in and says, don't worry. I think we can make him into a walkie-talkie. Walkie-talkie? What's that? Well, he can walk and he can talk. And that's pretty good. I was horrified. I was like, well, I don't want to be a walkie-talkie. I want to do more than that with my life. Maybe I can feed myself, do the laundry, you know, something, cook my own food, do something for myself, dress myself.
We are looking at your report for the Candida, just to show people that it's really there and it's really free, and there it is, and awesome.
It used to sell for $800 on the Internet. And when that was first released, it grossed $35,000 the first week.
Good grief. Well, we will put the link up for people. Well, they just need to go to your link and get it.
Yeah, they can just go to vitalitycapsules.com/candida, and there it is.
Okay, the two more questions from the audience, and we're getting some chats of people who've actually done this. That turpentine took away sore throat. We've had people on talking about statins.
Yeah.
What's your opinion there about statins and what can be done?
Well, I wish it was just an opinion, but unfortunately it's an observation as well. Statins do a lot of harm and no good at all. There's no evidence. They do any good. Now, in the medical literature, again, they don't tell this to you, the public, but if you you can go on medscape.com, it's open to the public. You just have to make up a password and a username, and then just click some kind of box telling them you're a healthcare professional or something like that. They have an incredible, vast resource of research studies done on statins. So now it's becoming revealed that statins are a leading cause of Alzheimer's disease. People who take statins become forgetful and lose their mental acuity. These are euphemisms used by the medical industrial complex.
And we had a guy in the clinic here, and his doctor wanted us to force his cholesterol down to 80. I can see that connection with Alzheimer's. We refused to do it, and this man couldn't even walk or turn around or keep his balance.
Correct. Yeah, and the cholesterol is a building block in the body for cell walls, for very important hormones, and all this stuff is damaged when cholesterol medications are given. So it's common for people who have chronic pain and dissolving of their muscles. I had one patient who went into kidney failure and died from her cholesterol medications. They actually increase your chances of stroke. If you take Lipitor, for example, your chances of a hemorrhagic stroke combined with your chances of a ischemic stroke is almost 20%. And that's not a helpful medication. So these statins are extremely, extremely dangerous.
We've had Stephanie Seneff on and several other doctors about it. They agree with you totally. We are looking, because everybody's watching what we're doing here. We're looking at all of these radio shows you have done.
Yes.
Incredible. I'm scrolling. And all of these are open to the public. Wait, it takes a lot of courage for you to come out in this way. Are you getting any flack?
Well, you know, I do live in Panama.
Did they
I think for me to do this and have my feet on U.S. soil would take an overwhelming amount of courage. But it's easier when you're on foreign soil.
Do you feel threatened if you were to come back to the States?
Well, that's a good question. So once my license was taken away, I was put on 2 do not employ lists and a terrorist list. So as a member of the terrorist list, I'm a certified terrorist. Yeah.
What's their reasoning?
They don't have to give a reason. They just put you on the list. But if I had to guess, anyone who can interfere with the proper functioning of government is a terrorist. I mean, for one person to be able to stop a $30 million bank heist perpetrated by a governor in response to a bribe, that is definitely terrorist-level activity.
Well, how could they punish you? They've already taken your license, taken away your ability to make a living. What else do they propose to do? They're going to put you in jail?
No, I thought at first, it took away the license, no problem, I can just maybe go get some work, tied me over. And then I got on 1 do not employ list. I said, well, it only eliminates about a third of the jobs in the United States. And then I got in a 2nd do not employ list, which eliminated pretty much the other jobs. And I said, no, it's okay, I can start a business or something, scrape something together. So I got on a plane to go visit some friends, see what I could scare up, only to find I was on the terrorist list. And I had the 4 S's on my ticket. People in your audience will know what that means. And so you get to the part where you hand them your passport and your driver's license. The guy goes on a loudspeaker and says, female security emergency to gate wherever you are. And, you know, these female security agents, you know, you see them running over, you realize that they're there for you. And back in 2002, you know, I was getting the same level of pat-down harassment that people are now getting, which back then was very distressing. And they offered to take me into the back room for more thorough searching. I'm like, no. I am a true patriot. I will strip nude right here in public for my country. And, you know, they were kind of shocked about that. Like, no, you have to beat me, torture me, and kill me right in front of everybody right here. I'm not going in the back room. And so after a few close brushes like that, I decided it's better for me not to push the matter, you know. And now they've passed laws that if you're on this list, the government can apprehend you without charges, send you to Guantanamo, torture you, even kill you. And so I'm like, okay, I got it.
Whistleblowing must not be an easy life, but it must be satisfying for you to be able to help all of these people.
Well, I didn't really see myself as a whistleblower, because when it came to the $30 million bond issue, I finally decided, you know what, I'm not going to give any more interviews in this matter or talk to anyone. I'm just going to write the bank and say, hey, you know, you're being wrong. And so I didn't see it that way. I saw it as protecting the income of my clients so they could continue to be my clients. That was what was going through my mind, is that I did not in any way see or perceive that public awareness of government activity could in any way change government activity, which is what I found to be the case. Because I went to the media, too, and they loved the story. I mean, and they wrote so many articles. You can just Google Post Standard, Syracuse, New York, Avenue of the Arts was the name of the of the Scam Avenue of the Arts. I mean, they wrote volumes. They wrote so much stuff. It would have filled several newspapers. But that didn't change anything. The mayor, the common council, the school board, they were all going to vote for this. And the state education board was going to okay it. So public opinion is irrelevant. And this whistleblowing, I mean, I don't quite understand why so-called whistleblowers get into so-called trouble. Because the public is sufficiently brainwashed that there's really little to fear. I don't think the government has much to worry about. People have emailed me. People have told me to my face that they would rather die than drink turpentine. And many of them will. And that's okay. But the government realizes it has that big a hold on people that many of them would rather do and follow the false propaganda and die than do something that's not what the government told them to do. And this is not even something that has a legal penalty. It's not like the government is saying, well, if you swallow turpentine, we're going to lock you up. You swallow turpentine, we're going to give you a fine. No, no penalty at all. Only thing that can happen is they can get better or heal. But nope. I'm waiting for orders from headquarters. I'm like, okay, I got it. So I don't think the whistleblowing has any kind of necessary impact. And, you know.
Is there something specific in turpentine that does the job?
There you go. A government-trained mind, I see. No, there's no one thing in any one thing that does one thing. That's like me saying that it's your pinky finger that's responsible for XYZ quality and sherry. That's not true. You're a whole. It's all of you. If I cut off both your hands and both your feet, you still wouldn't be sherry. You know, you'd be different.
I'm asking from a bioacoustic mind because I would just translate that into frequency and use it with people.
There may be frequencies in the turpentine. Now, there's a question. Turpentine has many frequencies, so I would recommend getting a bottle and checking out the frequencies. That would be the way to reverse engineer it.
I think I will do that. You know, in one part of your book, you quote that 759,755 people were murdered by the pharmaceutical industry in 2011. Can you talk about that a bit? I'm looking up turpentine.
Yeah, I have to revise that. It's not murder. So the time I wrote the book, I was not that sophisticated in my understanding. And since then, I've actually gone to the dictionary and looked up murder. Murder is unauthorized killing. So if the killing is authorized, as in a policeman shot someone, or someone's killed in self-defense, or the executioner gave a lethal injection to someone on death row, those are all authorized killings, therefore not murder. So since the killings done by the drug companies are authorized at the point where the FDA approves the drug, and because the doctors are authorized at the point of licensure, none of these killings is murder. None of them is punishable by law.
Boy, I don't even know how to respond to that.
Yeah, I don't.
Go ahead, Richard.
I'm going to jump slightly back to the turpentine for a minute. And this is one of the things that this is part of the reasons that I became an herbalist was the idea of what you're talking about there is that the actions of herbs, each herb is a whole food in my mind.
Correct.
And right. I think that's what you're saying about the turpentine is that there may be able, we may be able to say it's substance A in turpentine. However, there's a synergism to the other substances in there. And that's the same where I'm coming at from an herbal perspective that, like, I'm opposed to standardized herbs because that means that
Correct.
They're looking at one specific substance in that herb saying, there it is, now it's standardized to that. And I think that's a pharmaceutical paradigm, and I don't like it.
It is.
Herbs are whole foods. Each single herb, whether it's echinacea or golden seal or ginseng or ashwagandha or whatever it is a whole food unto itself. And what those little tiny things in there that may cause the totality of the effect is so much more powerful than a single thing. And I think that's the same
Correct.
Thing. I've heard of the turpentine protocols, but I'll be reading your paper after the call, that it's so much more powerful to have the synergism.
Yes, and that's what vitality capsules are, is there's synergism among a collection of herbs, and there's nothing in there but herbs, no filler. But what the pharmacy companies have done is they're co-opting the natural/herbal movement by introducing the concept of standardized extracts. So standardized extracts, unlike the herbs, have much more severe side effects. They're much more harsh, and they're not as well tolerated. And so as an herbalist, you may have noticed that when you use the herbs, you can safely use a much higher dose than you can of an extract, for example. And
yes.
That's what I found. So I avoid extracts whenever possible and use the whole herbs preferentially.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of capsules of herbs. I used to formulate my, and I was so foolish, I even encapsulated my own herbs by hand for clients. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of take an herb, grind it up, put it in a capsule, take two, get back to me in the morning. Or take two every hour.
Right.
You know, like
right. So what's
a classic old formulation. Yeah.
The pharmaceutical companies, with the blessing of so-called scientists that they've hired and paid very well, are propagandizing the public into accepting the superiority of extracts. And with this, it allows the pharmaceutical companies to transfer the lethality to the herbs. So the deal, this is not at all about the money. It is not about the money because, you know, if you look at the money, what, 500 people on the earth own 90% of all the cash. All, you know, if you want a money trail, they can create a money trail anytime they want to because they have all the money. So the money trail is not what it's about. It's about the power trail. It's about controlling every minute of your day and every dollar that you earn and every action that you do. And so, of course, a money trail is created to get you to act this way, act that way. And people are programmed to economize and to follow financial incentives. And this simply leads them to vaccinate their children, destroy their lives, destroy their families, destroy their own health. And so if I would tell anyone, ignore the money trail. Just get rid of it. Instead, don't look at that money trail. Look at your money trail. Like, what are you spending your money on? That's what you should focus on. And we should focus on what are you doing with your life? Are you going from doctor visit to doctor visit? Are you going from test to test? Are you submitting to actions that are making your body uncomfortable and putting you in pain? Oh, you are? Well, that is the problem. That is what it's all about. It's all about getting you to submit to torture, mutilation, and killing. That's what it's all about. And it's about getting you to give up and sacrifice all of your personal resources in the process. That is everything you've worked for, whatever that may be. But it's not about the money, because money is just a piece of paper. And people who have a lot of money, they know that. What they really want is they want you to work, build a house, maybe buy a car, and then they get to take your house. They get to take your car. And even now, they're taking your children. And that is what it's all about. It is not about the money. The money is just a means to do all this. And if you keep following the money, you're going to get dizzy going in circles, and you're just not going to really get anywhere. You're not going to unravel it. Because if you follow the money, then eventually you get to a place where the numbers are so big, the numbers are so huge, that you can't possibly do anything about it. But if you don't follow the money trail, instead follow the power trail, you can do anything you want. You can have the world in your hands. You could turn anything upside down. Like when I saw that $30 million bond issue, I didn't see $30 million. I saw something that needed to be fixed. I said, I'm going to find who can fix this and get it fixed. That's not a money problem. And the answer wasn't a money answer. And the same thing with the problems your listeners have with their health and that they're experiencing. It's not a money question. It's not a money answer.
I'm stunned to see that we're moving toward the end of our time. I mean, in the sense of not on the planet, I mean on the show. And I, do people get to work with you now? I mean, do you actually have clients that you work with, or are you retired from that part of your practice and you're what I would call a positive, you know, force for change, or as we like to say, a rabble rouser?
No, I'm not a rabble rouser. I try to mind my own business as much as I can. But people can work with me. They go to vitalitycapsules.com, click at the top on discovery session or one-on-one. So what people pay for is an introductory session, and then they have the opportunity if they'd like to work with me longer term, also if I'm able to, because I'm pretty busy. I can only take so many people. I'm only one person. So right now I'm doing two things. I do have personal clients, but you know, I'm getting overwhelmed with my time requirements, so I'm opening a program where I can train other people to do what I do. And so that's the next frontier, is to really make the information go viral. Like the turpentine has gone viral, but there's so much more in terms of ways to heal people effectively and quickly and without having to generate a medical record.
What are the vitality capsules about?
When I was in medical practice and I gave people the choices and it led to the zero death rate, I was really elated. And the next step was these people who are now living and not dying, I wanted to give them superior results. So I was able to, you know, cure or apparently cure things like rheumatoid arthritis and lupus. But the people would relapse as soon as they went off their diet or did anything wrong. And so the vitality capsules also were about, I found I could not cure anyone who was constipated. It was not possible. And so people needed to start having bowel movements. And I tried everything. Oh, enemas, castor oil. You know, I mean, I had a list. But it was very just unpleasant. But when I ground up these herbs and put them in a capsule for people, they started having bowel movements and they started getting tremendous progress. Then I realized that the vitality capsules have the added advantage of cleaning out the bile ducts. And it's the clogged and narrowed bile ducts that keep people from healing completely. And so the vitality capsules just increase the bile flow. So it melts away that junk in the bile ducts, and people can clean out their bile and their liver over time pleasantly. And then their body becomes much more resilient because the liver can pick up the pace and just squish out more toxins or more chemicals if they happen to encounter some.
We are looking at your site about it and what's in these capsules right now, but we're out of time. How can people get in touch with you? How can they get your book? I noticed it was on Amazon. People could read it for free. I think that was your book. And there were some wonderful quotes from Amazon. One of them, Dr. Jennifer Daniels is the Edward Snowden of the medical pharma. Well, that piece is missing. But comparing you to a very famous whistleblower who did a lot of good for the people. And another one, it says that the word pharmacy comes from the Greek pharmacia, which means sorcery. And another one from your review, as a whistleblower, she definitely has a spot in heaven. And it's 5 stars. Everybody who interviewed your book gave it 5 stars. The lethal dose. And we will put in our chat how people can get in touch with you.
Yep, vitalitycapsules.com. You can click contact us, or you can just Shali, who's my assistant, Shali@vitalitycapsules.com.
We are putting them all in the chat. They'll be in both rooms for people, and I will also put them on the page where we announce that you're going to be on the show. I will go back and add these links for people. Any
Thank
last
you.
Thoughts, Richard?
Lethal dose of 50. No, I'm here. I'm somewhat, I'm stunned by the whole mix of everything from the idea of standard of care to the idea that there is an LD50. The dogmatic beliefs, that was actually a phrase that the first time I heard Bruce Lipton lecture, he explained dogma is actually a term to use in medicine of like what I would term fixed beliefs. And it's just so radical. It's amazing that this is called a healthcare system. Really? Health? I don't know. I knew this was going to be fun, Dr. Daniels. This was great. Thank you so much. Great information. And, that MBA really is serving you well.
I tell you, I would have been broke. I would never be able to make money in the middle of the ghetto. I would never be able to figure it out. The MBA is totally indispensable.
I wished I'd had an MBA when I had the herb store. I would have actually made, real money.
Would have done very well, yes.
Oh, boy. But that's a whole other show. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great rest of the week, and we will see you guys on Tuesday. And again, thank you, Dr. Daniels. And Sherry, any other thoughts?
No, I just wish we should have her back because there's too many other thoughts. So she will certainly be one of our favorite guests, and if she's willing and has time, we will have her back.
Right.
All right,
wonderful.
Absolutely. Just write your questions down, and we'll talk again.
You bet. Thank you so much again, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you on Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Okay, welcome. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.